Like developing a super race, only without the breeding. But Joe had warned me I would hear unexpected things. He told me I must go along with an open mind and a happy heart. Not talking, not thinking.
Anna tried to erase the frown that had gathered on her brow, forcing a smile to her lips and placidity to her forehead. Sometimes a forced smile worked as well as a real one, fooled you into feeling better. Joe, looking at her reflection in the rain-swept window, seemed to nod approval of her forced facial rearrangement, her fake serenity. She began to feel better. She let her thoughts go with the passing landscape, leaving some in the trees, some on the sloping ground, some in the occasional ponds. She released them all, even the ones she was most attached to, that she would like to explore, like the idea that Chen was a snake oil salesman. She witnessed the jumble of her thoughts coming into her head and being jettisoned. Go, she told each new arrival. Jump off the train. Goodbye. Her mind became empty, and now on her lips was a gentle smile. A real one. There was a high wall around the universe city, and at the imposing gate, a gatehouse. In the gatehouse were guards who refused Anna and Joe admittance, their name not being on the list of those expected that day. Their garrulous train acquaintance was allowed through, given a guide who, Anna surmised, probably whisked her off to a thorough physical, then put her in a holding pen until the test results came through.
Can I send my name in to the teacher?
I'm afraid he's out for a drive.
Oh, in that case we will wait here for him. Is this the only entrance?
Sorry, sir. Yes, it is.
Fine, we will wait here.
In the following hours, no one else came except three trucks full of young people who had been laboring in the fields and now were through for the day. All about them was agricultural land bordered by hills and, to the far west, a mountain range. The rain had let up and the air was fine and fresh. The sky was lowering, giving a crystalline clarity to the landscape in the way that bright sun only confuses.
It seems the rain showers have drenched my eyes along with the land, wiping the slate clean for a new way of seeing. What a masterpiece this world is. I feel the sight of it burning into my soul, branding me with an earth iron, so that if I should chance to go to another planet, the aliens will know at once where it is I come from, just by looking into my eyes. They will see green fields, purple mountain ranges, blue skies, sunset clouds, the everlastingly rolling radiant seas. And they will be stunned.
The whole idea of branding is to return you to your rightful owner.
I am my owner.
They sat on the ground, leaning against the towering wall. Anna conjured up images of her husband and children and tried to beam loving thoughts to them. She did this often during each day, since the hermitage, where they were, was without a phone, and she was completely cut off from them.
I love you. I will be home soon. I'm having fun with Joe and we'll have stories to tell you. Are my thoughts being received by them? Maybe Jimmy will get them and pass them on to Errol and Melissa.
At last the sound of a powerful motor heralded the teacher's coming. A dot on the road soon became a long, low, gleaming silver sports car. Two others followed. The gate was opening for the automobile's non-stop entrance, but Joe planted himself in front of the oncoming car. This automatically ejected the guards from the gatehouse, and, with a screeching of brakes, two men jumped from one of the following cars. Seeing the burly men and their scowling faces, Anna couldn't help but reflect on what Joe had said to Jacob about having a bodyguard, and her mind was hardened more against Chen. All four of the brutes were prepared to seize upon the old man in the wheat-colored robe with a gaily printed kerchief fluttering on his head, but the teacher got out of his car and waved the guards aside.
Stop! Stop! It's Joe! It's Joe!
He enfolded Joe in his arms. They held each other fast and rocked back and forth. Locked together, they performed loops and a figure eight, as if doing a dance of happiness. Chen looked hardly more than 30 years old to Anna, although she knew he was in his 50s. When Joe introduced her, she was almost knocked over by the force of his presence and the vitality of his glance. Truly, he did seem like some sort of Superman or man-god. She could swear there was a halo of light not just around his head, but around his entire person. He wore a simple outfit of white linen, loose pants, and shirt. His hair, thick, bright, and shiny, fell to his shoulders. His features were simple, yet somehow stunning in their symmetry.
Joe, you look wonderful. Anna, welcome.
Anna thought Joe had enormously improved all day, and now, aglow from the reunion, he seemed to have shed his years and his illness. Still, Anna had the feeling he was drawing with all his might on the life and strength left in him, that he was somehow creating a new energy from the slim reservoir within or from the energy she and his teacher were bestowing upon him.
This is a happy day for me, and I thought I'd got beyond all possible surprises. But, Joe, you are always a trickster. You always did the unexpected thing. Is he still a trickster, Anna? During those wonderful years when Joe and I were together and people came to follow us, he had a way of tricking them into illumination. He would answer a question for them, and you could actually see a little light bulb go on over their heads. The only trouble was, then they would go away. They wouldn't need us anymore. It was a good thing when Joe left me. Then my followers would stick around for a while and do some serious following.
Yes, he's still a trickster.
Can you both squeeze into my car? I'll give you the grand tour.
For the next half hour, they were whirled through the universe city, the students bowing as Chen passed by them, and many of them having to scurry out of the way for the sake of life and limb. But Anna thought, since death was proscribed, it would probably be okay if the teacher ran them over. It wouldn't even leave tire tracks.
Despite his charismatic presence, my clouded feelings about him were not dispelled. Distrust prevailed, and every time I looked at Joe's glowing face, I felt mystified.
Lost in her thoughts about Joe and his teacher, she hardly heard the spiel about all the different buildings and their purposes. She could see it was a wondrous place laid out gracefully, the buildings modern, of pastel colors complemented by rows of trees, gardens, parks, sculptures, fountains, amphitheaters.
I've got 1,000 students. I will introduce you to them tonight. We will have a special gathering, for you are my first student, and, at 73, you're like a man in his prime. You epitomize all my ideas, Joe. And isn't it true that the whole world comes to see you? Aren't you the holy man?
No. I'm still just the trickster.
The teacher's house was elegantly simple, the kind of simplicity that comes from the best designers with the best materials at the highest prices. It was modern, light, and airy, everything up to the minute, spacious, restrained, yet colorful, and even cozy. It was perfect, Anna thought, as was the meal, tasty and healthy, and not overabundant. The wine was nectar. Students assiduously served them, but were treated by the teacher with politeness and respect. Joe accepted all offerings with pleasure, but actually ate little, if at all, and drank nothing.
I felt it would be unfair to say it was all a disgusting display of wealth, but I thought that it was. No more so than the president of any university or than any bishop of a church, and yet, this was Joe's teacher, whom he'd found as a boy in a monastery. Why was Joe not appalled at this life he led now? This inhumane anti-life which denied both birth and death?
Anna smiled to herself, since it was she, not Joe, who was luxuriating at table. Her plate was clean, her wine glass empty, and soon there would be coffee.
Will you excuse me while I go to my room? Let me know when I'm wanted for the gathering.
A half hour later, as I stood with Joe in the wings, waiting for him to go on stage with his teacher, he asked me to bring him a chair.
Chen will go on for some time, telling them all what a phenomenon I am.
Of course.
Excellent. Oh, could you put it on the stage so I can be seen? I know Chen wants me to make my entrance doing cartwheels, but I must sit down now.
The holy man looked into Anna's eyes with ineffable sweetness and kissed her on the brow. She waited for what he would say, but he remained silent.
As I kissed Anna's forehead, I thought to myself what a fierce-looking forehead it was, and how before this day was done, it would grow black, like a thundercloud. Anna had been a very bad, wise woman today. Sometimes, to see her frowning at Chen or rolling her eyes in exasperation, I'd had to stifle my laughter. Of course, Anna was still a mere wise woman in training, quite rough about the edges, but nevertheless far ahead of others in her kindness and wisdom. Evolved and highly conscious.
A kaleidoscope of images of their journey swept across the holy man's mind, his favorite image being the one of her sitting on the airport floor, wrathfully tugging off her boots to give to the thief, an airport warrior.
Last night, when I woke up to feel her warm body clasping mine, I thought it was 50 years ago. I sat up to look to her other side for my little daughter. And then I remembered where I was. It was Anna sleeping beside me, and I was the old holy man. But for the first time, the loneliness of half a century was lifted from me because of her kindness, her compassion.
Joe knew that Anna, too, would know loneliness in the years to come. She would have moments of black despair, but time and again, the darkness would dissolve in the light of understanding until it would come to her, the light and love that surpassed understanding. Joe sat down, his body feeling glad of the chair. Now his mind was without thoughts or images. He smiled and closed his eyes.
I could hear Chen's sonorous voice, and then nothing. I see a gleaming whiteness waving and glimmering in my consciousness until it resolves into the form of the hermitage. It's not a memory. I am there in the boulder garden. How very nice. The boulders are white, too, as they appear sometimes when the moonlight shines on them. And through the window, I see the monks at dinner. They rise from the table in astonishment, and they come to the window. And there is the shining of eyes, smiles, rocks, stars. All is radiance. All.
The teacher stood before his 1,000 students, and a soft, clear voice spun from his mouth like silk from a cocoon, enchanting everyone. He told them about Joe and how, as his first student, he stood here now as the culmination of all his teachings, all that was good, wise, and immortal. Anna did not ever think she would feel embarrassed for Joe, but she did now and bent her head in shame. It was as if the teacher were making a circus act of the holy man, making him his own creature to perform at his command, and Joe was letting him. The teacher went on for some time, but finally he finished.
now it is time for you to hear from the holy man in his own words. And so I give you Joe, he who is the embodiment of truth.
Standing aside, Chen gestured gracefully to Joe, who remained sitting in the chair, remained sitting and sitting. Anna left her place in the wings, walked uncertainly over to Joe, and bent over him. She felt his pulse with her finger. She gave a sob. She straightened up and looked over at Chen.
He's dead.
Huh?
No.
No. It's impossible.
That was a very good trick, Joe. It's too bad you can't see the light bulb over my head. But I guess you don't need to, do you?
We must get him off this horrible stage. No, don't send for your students. I forbid it. No strangers. We must carry him ourselves, we whom he knew and loved.
With superhuman strength, she lifted the holy man in her arms, carrying him from the stage back toward the teacher's house. Staggering and lurching, she gasped out more orders.
We must lay him out comfortably and bathe him, and I must wash his robe. There must be candles, music. We'll sit with him through the night.
Give him to me. You're not strong enough to carry him.
Oh, that he should die in this terrible place. That he should leave his beloved mountain and hermitage amongst to come to you.
Yes.
I don't understand it. He said you were sick, that he needed to be by your side.
Did he?
But he was the sick one. So sick. In such pain. Suffering. He barely held himself together to get here. I mean, one night... Well, it was only last night. He almost died. I wanted to take him to the hospital. But he said no. Tomorrow he would be with you. Why? Why? You are not worth it. You're not worth it.
They carried Joe gently and slowly back to Chen's house. Then they placed him on the bed that was to have been his for the night.
I guess Joe thought that I was worth it. He honored me with his death. He came to remind me of death because he is right. I am sick. And he had to shock me out of it in the best way that he could. He saved his dying for me to be at and to take heed of. Do you understand?
But he's gone. He's gone.
No, he's not, Anna. He's only transformed. He's gone to another existence.
Joe didn't believe that.
I do. And as long as we exist, he will be in our hearts. Don't feel lonely. Don't feel abandoned.
He took poor Anna into his arms and held her close. Unexpectedly, she felt soothed.
He gave you that beautiful last kiss. I saw him. Do you remember the kiss? It was his goodbye, you know.
And his eyes. You never saw such sweetness. Chen, please forgive me. I've said unpardonable things. How disappointed Joe would be to have witnessed my abominable behavior. From the very start of this day, he asked me to be serene, to be silent. No thinking, no talking, he said. But I didn't follow his advice for 1 minute. I've committed bad thoughts all day, and now bad action. Unspeakable action.
Of course I forgive you.
You see... Everything you stood for seemed contrary to Joe's way, and therefore repugnant to me. I couldn't understand why he'd come.
Do you understand now?
Because he believed in you. He said you were a prophet. To the last, you were his beloved teacher. He always spoke of you with reverence.
That is generous of you to say. Anna, don't feel bad about yourself. Naturally, you were unbalanced by this day. Joe knew what he would find here. My sickness. It was not the shock to him that it was to you.
Yes. He said he would make you well. He was glad. Do you know what the first words were he said this morning?
I'll bet he said, "This will be a wonderful day."
Again, Anna wept. By now, her robe was soaking wet, as if she'd been out in a rainstorm, and the kerchief she clutched in her hand was a sodden ball.
Anna, we will sit with Joe's body tonight, and then tomorrow we will take his body back to the hermitage together for his burial. We will be there the next day.
How is that possible?
I have a private jet, of course. Can you forgive me?
Who am I to forgive anyone after the way I've acted? I am not a wise woman. I am not even close.
Anna, whenever you are feeling bad about yourself, remember Joe's kiss of compassion. Remember, he loved you not only for your wisdom, but for your humanity.
I'm neither a wise woman nor humane. I'm a calamity.
On Chen's private jet, Anna and Chen sat together in rotating chairs, facing each other, and they talked. Their chairs were able to extend into lounges, so Anna could lie full length, which she intended to do very soon. She was exhausted from the night of sitting with Joe's body, sore at heart from her loss, feeling alone and disoriented. Joe no longer with her. Joe no longer in the world at all. Gone. Forever gone. She remembered how dreadfully she'd carried on after Joe died, seizing his body, speaking cruelly to Chen.
Luckily, Joe died before he saw my true colors. Why did he die? In part to show me my true colors, to show me how far I have to travel. I told Chen about Joe's last visit to the children in the park at the bottom of the mountain. Always leave them laughing, he said.
She longed for sleep. Chen was one of those people who could sleep for 5 minutes and get energized for another 8 hours. The holy man's body was now in a casket, which was with them in the passenger section of the plane. Of course, there were no casket makers in Universe City, but the teacher had ordered one of his student handymen to make one, and he had made a good job of it. Chen had provided some beautiful white linen to line the casket.
I remember Joe's teaching that when a loved one dies, you don't lose him, you give him back. So I have given Joe back. I find no comfort in saying this. Maybe I should try again. I've given Joe back. I've given Joe. I've given. I have. I. And oddly, after this, I did begin to feel a little comforted.
Tell me about your journey here.
Chen didn't seem to want to know anything about the 25 years since he'd last seen Joe. Nothing about the hermitage, the pilgrims, the life, or the wisdom. Just details of the 3-day trip. Anna got as far as picking up Joe in the taxi in the town after he had said goodbye to the children in the park. He'd just told them he was going away, and then he did something which made them laugh, but Anna couldn't see what it was.
Then he showed me how to wiggle my ears and cross my eyes at the same time and recommended that I practice until I had it perfectly.
I don't believe a woman can wiggle her ears.
Oh, that's a ridiculous thing to say. Though, I do recall Joe suggesting that it was not normally within a woman's powers. So can you wiggle your ears?
Yes.
She waited for him to display the talent, but he did not sweep away the slick black curtain of hair to show the good work that his ears could do. She began to feel he was lying. But why would one lie about such a thing as ear wiggling? Why lie about anything, for that matter? Anna had never understood lying and why some people felt the necessity for it. It was so much easier to tell the truth. Why sow confusion? But on this major subject of ear-wiggling, it seemed to her that you simply went ahead and did it if you could, like the taxi driver, Esla, who had showed off his stuff immediately when the subject came up. One didn't maintain a stance about it, saying he could do it, lying.
Why aren't you going on with your story?
I am wondering why you were lying to me about your ear-wiggling.
It wasn't exactly a lie, since in the same breath I vowed to learn this arcane art of Joe's.
Don't you think it would be better to vow to love little children, since the arcane art will be for their benefit?
Perhaps you are right, but then will I have to vow to love grown-ups as well?
Good heavens, don't you love people at all?
Oh, I love nature, beautiful things, art, literature, ideas. I particularly love this airplane. I love Joe and one or two others.
Well, learn to wiggle your ears. You might as well begin somewhere. Now, I'm going to sleep.
Begin to be Joe, do you mean? No, Anna. It is not who or what you are. It is that you know who and what you are. Whereas lying, or not lying, is not important.
Anna dreamed of Jimmy and Melissa and awoke feeling happy, feeling blessed. Soon she would hold them in her arms. Chen was sitting on the floor of the plane in the lotus position, and so he remained for another 3 hours. They were served a meal by the flight attendant, and then the teacher continued his interrogation of Anna about the holy man's journey. In response, she told about the taxi ride to the airport, the crippled women, the thief, and the car crash.
So you learned to always leave them laughing. And then what lesson did you take from the exchange with Esla?
To be creative. To create, not accumulate.
And from the crippled women, you learned to ask for help when you need it.
From the thief, I learned not to cherish anything but to give away gladly. From the car crash, I learned about taking the blame. But don't forget, the first lesson of the trip was Joe's exchange with the holy bodyguard. To approach one's travels with the perception that men have holiness within, not evil. And yet to be attentive, mindful, because allowing yourself to be protected by another only hampers attentiveness and renders you half alive, not to mention drawing attention to yourself.
This teaching trip was for you, not me.
You're the one asking the questions. I'm only telling you what you want to know.
But I am asking the questions for your sake, to be sure you didn't miss anything.
Anna waited and asked herself if he was lying again. The answer was no. And this was no simple matter of ear-wiggling. This was major. For although Joe had told her at the outset it was to be a teaching trip, she'd forgotten it. Things happened. A lot happened, as it turned out. But she'd been so wrapped up in Joe and in the traveling with him and concerned for him that she wasn't thinking of lessons. Now Joe's teacher seemed to be suggesting Joe had conjured all the experiences for her sake. And truly, now that she thought about it, now that he made her think about it, the trip was riddled with lessons. Anna next told Chen about the cafe and the men there who wanted her to come with them so that they could rape her and what Joe had done to effect their escape.
I guess I learned that men in a mob are no longer holy. And while I still mustn't hate my enemies, I must be prepared to outwit them and then to run like hell. I think the hardest part of the entire trip, though, was sitting on the train and listening to your future student talk about you and your ideas. Joe had instructed me to be still. I was to be silent and not judge. I was not even to think. Serenity was to be the key note. This was impossible. But I've already told you about that, haven't I? It sounds like some adventure was happening every minute, but actually most of the time Joe and I were together in silence. In peace. And love.
Which is what in-between time has to be filled with to ready you for life and its difficulties.
Peace and love aren't in-between time. It is the trouble that comes in between.
Well, yes, you're right. And usually trouble only comes if you're looking for it.
But we weren't looking for it.
Well, Joe was. So he could teach you. Now he has prepared you well for a life of wandering.
Wrong again. My life is to be in the Hermitage. A life of peace, silence, and love. I'm sorry, but I really do think this teaching trip was for you. The whole trip was for you. Won't you take it to heart?
Sorry. I have no heart.
You are too hard on yourself. So maybe I'll stop being so hard on you.
I'm incredibly easy on myself.
He closed his eyes, his face like a beautiful, impenetrable stone carving. But she didn't think he was sleeping, not even for 5 minutes. He seemed so lonely. Her heart went out to him. Then Anna had a strange feeling that Chen had closed his eyes so as not to show how his heart went out to her. They had flown through a day and a night, stopping once to refuel. Now it was dawn. Anna was eating fruit and drinking coffee.
Chen, a while back, you spoke of the importance of knowing oneself, not to delude oneself or pretend. What about greediness? Isn't that the worst of all? It seems to me that it is greed that leads to corruption, murder, war. Greed engenders all the other poisons.
It's because you are so upset about Joe's death that you keep attacking me. And so I submit to you that my love for my beautiful university and for this marvelous machine that carries us to our destination, tearing holes through the sky, is exactly the same as your attachment to your cowboy boots. And if pressed, I would give them up just as easily as you were prepared to give up your boots to the thief.
What would constitute your being pressed?
I guess it would have to be something as powerful as preserving Joe's locket from the thief's covetousness. Despite Joe's trick, I still believe in my ideas. My search for the immortality that the ancient townmasters enjoyed. But I see that I was trying to continue life while at the same time denying life. Henceforth, birth, death, sickness, and old age will be honored at my university.
Are you afraid of death?
I have put myself in the way of it 100 times, and it won't have me. This has encouraged my feeling of being an immortal and of wanting to pass on my practice to others.
Anna felt his sincerity, bizarre though his belief was. But she knew that was what made such gurus seductive. Their belief in their rightness, in their infallibility, combined with their golden tongues, created their charisma and drew disciples to them.
Everything, without exception, dies. The fruit fly in 24 hours, the giant redwood tree in 2,000 years, and we humans get 100 years tops. That's the arrangement. Possibly we go on to live another life, or come back to live another life here. But this is our only life for certain. And Joe's idea is to live this one in the kindest, wisest way we can, with the awareness of impermanence enhancing each day. Well then, back to greediness.
Yes, greediness. Having is not greediness. Wanting is. Let us return to your boots.
Must we?
If you wanted 10 pairs of boots, if you were unable to eradicate the ongoing desire for more and more boots, you would be greedy. As long as we keep to our one pair, our one private jet plane, and our one city, we will not be poisoned. Therefore, please stop me, Anna, if I buy another plane.
Oh, surely you're not being serious.
Oh, I am.
Chen, tell me, please, how many cars do you have?
I have a fleet of cars, but it is only one fleet.
You are deluded. It is part of your sickness.
They were nearing their destination. The plane had begun its descent, whispering powerfully through the air.
I have to tell you that the car that you've ordered to meet us will be useless, because we have to walk the last 10 miles up the mountain, and it's steep.
I will have my men arrange for a stretcher. The casket will be too bulky to carry. I laid Joe on yards and yards of white linen, the same linen my shirts are made of. We can wrap him in the cloth before putting him on the stretcher. Come, Anna. We might as well prepare him now. I'll open the casket.
I don't want to see him. I've seen many people die, but I've never seen them almost 3 days dead. I don't want to see Joe that way. I want to remember him as he looked when he kissed me, and as he was the night of his death, seeming to be sleeping peacefully.
But as Chen raised the lid, she marveled at the delicate scent that flowed forth into the pressurized cabin.
Why, it's Joe's favorite spring flower, the mountain lupin, as blue as the sky. How were you able to find them in your agricultural valley?
Come here, Anna. Come and see.
Reluctantly, she left her chair. Joe lay in his wheat-colored robe on the many-folded lengths of white linen, uncorrupted, still looking beautiful, restful, at peace. The lovely aroma of mountain lupin caressing the air all around him. Only, there were no flowers. At the airport, the two bodyguards carried the casket, Anna her pack, and Chen his luggage. The limousine was awaiting them. So were the three crippled women. The blind one had a brightly colored kerchief folded narrowly and tied over her unsightly eyes. The armless one wore the kerchief around her neck, and the shriveled-legged one wore hers around her waist. She handed Anna the bundle of kerchiefs Joe had ordered.
I hope you don't mind that we took three for ourselves.
Of course not. I'm delighted. You all look so cheerful.
This means you are now members in good standing of the Holy Order of Anna Kerchiefians. The motto of which is, it's good luck to be nice. Wear them with joy.
How do you know about that?
Joe told me about it. I guess he neglected to tell you.
You didn't need to tell us. We could see at once what was happening. Our holy man is gone, but the wise woman has come to stay. Anna, we are proud of you, and these kerchiefs are flags of your wisdom. In fact, now that I am wearing this kerchief, I feel a lot more aware. We all feel better, but I still feel the phantom pain in my arms.
Anna felt shy about laying her hands on the woman's stumps, especially in front of Chen, since all her life she'd been so careful to keep her healing powers hidden. But she fluttered her fingers against the stubs and along the arms and hands that were no longer there. It was all done in the blink of an eye, and the next minute she was climbing into the limousine where Joe's casket was already waiting. Chen joined her a few minutes later, having first ascertained from the women where to find a stretcher. He directed the chauffeur to the hospital, and the stretcher was soon installed in the car.
First, let's take the kerchiefs to the children in the park, because Joe promised.
The children came running when they saw the limousine, for this was not a normal sight in the town.
Hi, I'm Anna. I've come to bring the kerchiefs Joe promised you.
She distributed the colorful squares, and there were exactly the right amount of them, as if they kept reproducing with the approach of each child. Some of the children adorned themselves, while others ran around, holding them in their hands, letting the cloth fly out behind them like banners.
Wear them with joy. And remember, it's good luck to be nice.
Did Joe die?
Yes, he did. But he wouldn't want you to be sad about it. He loved nothing so much as the sound of your laughter.
Joe was funny.
Yes, he was very funny.
What else did Joe say?
He once told me that when he died, he didn't need to go to heaven because he went to heaven every time he came to play in the park. He was always learning from you.
How to be relaxed and take time. How to be open, curious, unrestrained, and most especially, how to play. And you know what? My two little children came to live at the Hermitage, so he got to have children with him before he died.
And hear them laugh?
Yes, and of course cry too, which is another sound of life. Now, I must hurry home to Melissa and Jimmy because I've been away from them for 5 whole days.
They came to play with us yesterday, with their dad.
They did? Oh, I'm glad. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
The limousine left them at the trailhead where the lilac still bloomed, as it had at the beginning of Anna and Joe's journey. Joe, wrapped in the snowy linen, was placed on the stretcher, and they began the ascent, Chen and the two bodyguards taking the four handles. Anna leading the way past the sorrowful wooden sign with the carved words, "The holy man is gone."
There was something else Joe wanted me to do in town, but I've forgotten what it is.
It will come to you.
Oh, I remember. He told me he had an errand to do at the photographer's shop and that I was to pick it up upon my return.
It will wait. You will remember it next time.
The sun went behind some clouds and a drizzly rain began to fall. A rainbow appeared briefly, then disappeared behind a curtain of more serious rain. Their trek began to assume the guise of a mournful funeral procession, heads bent so as to place their feet carefully. The trail was muddy, and as it grew steeper, it ran with water, and they sloshed along rather miserably. The weather passed in a half hour, and the sun came out, attended by birdsong. The spring flowers shook off the rain and opened before their very eyes, releasing heady aromas into the cold air, attracting a population of honeybees that joined the procession.
Only a quarter of the way along, we took a break, sitting on a boulder, drying our clothes and enjoying the view that seemed to stretch through time as well as distance. The bees sought out clover. The bodyguards, with their previously impassive, almost brutal faces, now were relaxed and smiling. They brought out packets of sandwiches to eat, then lay back soaking up the sun, apparently deciding not to be ready to give their lives for Chen for the next couple of minutes. I felt restless and wished we could get going again. The closer I got to home, the more excited I was to see my family.
Chen stood up, hearing and seeing Kim, before Anna did a few minutes later. The young monk arrived on the run.
I have been looking for you, every hour running the trail.
He nodded a greeting to the men, then looked at Anna gravely, his face distressed. He noticed the stretcher with Joe's body wrapped in white linen, sprinkled with a golden scattering of bees.
Kim!
It's all right. We know that Joe is dead. We knew to the minute. And we have prepared the ground. But there is something else.
Kim, will you run back and tell Jimmy and Melissa that I'm here? Maybe they could come to meet me.
Anna, Errol took them to town yesterday and has not returned.
The children in the park said they had come to play yesterday. Well, Errol probably decided to spend a night before the long walk home, don't you think?
Jacob followed Errol to town, but lost him. He looked for him everywhere. But he was not at any of the inns. Jacob is not far behind me. He can tell you.
Now it hit Anna that they thought Errol had stolen the children away, had left the country with them. She closed her eyes. Red and orange flashed in her brain as if it had caught fire, and she would never again be able to think. Or maybe the vivid flashing colors were protection, so she would not have to think the unthinkable. Anna came to with her head in Chen's lap. His hand lay lightly on her brow. The searing colors were gone, but she felt deeply tired.
My men have gone to the Hermitage with a stretcher. Jacob and Kim are here.
Jacob?
Hello, Anna. I'm so sorry. I was afraid Errol might leave in your absence, but I never thought he'd take the children. Now, I followed him just in case. He told me he was going halfway down the mountain to see the ponies, but he went all the way to town. They went to the park and played. Then I saw him get into the town taxi with Jimmy and Melissa. I commandeered a car, but I lost them.
Did you go to the airport?
I did. They weren't there. I stayed until the only plane left.
Well, that's good.
Then I went to all the inns. Yeah, but no luck.
We have to find Ezra, the taxi driver. He'll know where they went. Chen, I'll go back to the town with Jacob. Kim will show you the way to the Hermitage. I'm sure I'll rejoin you by tonight, but, well, my children must come before everything. Before Joe's funeral, before the Hermitage.
Yes.
She might not find her family in the town. She thought of what Chen had said about the meaning of her journey, with Joe preparing her for a life of wandering. She felt frightened. With enormous effort, Anna controlled her fear.
You must be so tired, Anna.
We can start first thing in the morning.
No, we must go right now, Jacob.
Yes.
He put his hands lightly on her shoulders. They burned through her robe and skin. She felt a jolt of new energy from his touch. Her fatigue fell away from her.
It is a time for utter fearlessness.
Anna remembered Joe saying that fearlessness was not bravery or courage. It was calmness. But she did not feel calm. Her mind was whirling, her body in a fight-or-flight mode.
Kim, there was so much I wanted to tell you, but Chen knows the whole story. He got it out of me, every word.
Anna wondered again about Chen's interrogation and the things he had said about it. But it was time for action, not for thinking. She must not think backward or forward. Her mind must be free to concentrate on the search for her children. And she must keep within her an ever-hopeful heart. But her mind still whirled and her nerves jangled. She could not even see straight.
I must have closed my eyes again. When I opened them, Kim and Chen were proceeding up the trail, talking eagerly together, looking like father and son or like two brothers. And I felt glad for them both that through giving back Joe they had met each other. They seemed full of light to me, while I felt I was standing in darkness, alone without Joe, the monks, or my family. It was just me and Jacob again. We had met in the line, fellow pilgrims. He had come to Ireland to return me to Joe and had stayed on. I suppose he has anointed himself my protector. We are friends to the death.
Anna thought back to a week ago, watching the sunset with Melissa on her lap, Jimmy standing beside her with an arm around her neck, Joe sitting on the other side, and felt overwhelmed with a sense of loss.
From here, the shining white hermitage was not in sight. Perhaps it was just as well not to glimpse it and wonder when, if ever, I would return to live within its happy walls.
Don't forget your errand in the town.
The words awakened her. She picked up her pack, which Jacob took from her and put on his back, and turned to face the downward trail, telling herself that soon she would hold her children in her arms. She must keep a clear, untroubled mind. She must travel the path before her without longing or fear. The darkness lifted from Anna, and the mountain landscape was illuminated. The air tasted fresh in her mouth. The world was wondrous in her sight. The rocks, trees, grasses, and sky.
Let's go.
Anna and Jacob raced back to town, but then stood bewildered in the town square, not knowing how to proceed, since there was no sign of Ezra or his taxi. They asked around, but got no satisfaction. Then, to her enormous relief, she saw the three disabled women inching towards them, the blind woman pulling the cart of the legless woman while tied to the armless one who was leading the way. Anna hailed them and explained her difficulty.
My husband and children seem to have disappeared into thin air. They were last seen yesterday, getting into Ezra's taxi.
We haven't seen Ezra all day.
Many times he takes off to go pot collecting, leaving hopeful customers stranded, missing appointments and planes.
This town really needs another taxi.
Hmm.
We would take over his business, but it would be difficult in our condition.
They wanted to discuss the pros and cons of being taxi drivers and did not seem to understand, as Anna did, that it was absolutely out of the question, not worth considering at all. Even if they could all sit on top of each other, it would not work. She tried to be patient and polite, but finally interrupted.
Esla isn't going to collect pots anymore. Can you please tell me where he lives?
They told Anna where to find his house on the outskirts of town, and she and Jacob hastened in the direction they pointed. Rounding a curve, they came upon Errol, Melissa, and Jimmy heading their way down the muddy, puddle-strewn road. In the joyful commotion of greeting, Anna wept tears of joy and relief. Everyone talked at once, except for Jacob, who stood aside. Mostly, the children wanted to show her the pots they had made at Esla's.
Look at them! That's why we've been so long. We had to wait for them to be fired.
We slept at Esla's. Esla's is full of pots. It's a pot house.
We were going to the airport to meet you, but Esla said there weren't any planes. He took us to his house and showed us how to make pots. Look at Dad's. It's a beautiful pot.
It's for you, Anna. A present.
The children chattered away while kissing her, tugging at her clothes, crawling into her arms, almost trying to get inside her.
I heard about Joe. I'm sorry. Are you all right, Anna?
I am now. Yes, I'm all right.
She looked into his eyes. Had he really gone to the airport to meet her? Or was it to leave her? He looked back at her steadily, clear-eyed. She knew there had been an outgoing plane yesterday, because Jacob had waited for it to take off. But Esla had told Errol there were no planes, perhaps saving her family for her with this lie.
But I won't ask Errol for the truth of it. I'll believe in him and in our love. What is the good of a marriage if there is no trust? I knew he'd been upset about life in the Hermitage, and in my absence, he could have made a rash decision to leave. If so, he had only half acted upon it. He had not left. He was here now, and they all looked so happy with their handmade pots. So I was happy too. Even the ever-sorrowful Jacob looked happy.
For the first time since Joe's death, Anna grasped how life went on. Didn't stop for a minute. In the few days since his death, she'd experienced so much. Love and laughter, anger and black despair. And she'd discovered the strength that was in her. That she could go on and do what she had to do, come what may. Maybe Joe hadn't made such a bad choice after all. A vision of the floating kerchiefs came to her eyes.
Shall we be on our way up the mountain?
Errol, I'm so glad you said that. Yes, let's.
I'll go for the ponies.
So we'll meet at the trailhead. I have a quick errand to run first.
At the photography store, Alum, the man whose ambition had once turned the town against him so that he'd run up the mountain to blame Joe, then stayed to be a monk, greeted Anna. He had the bright, calm, clear-eyed countenance of the enlightened.
Hello, Anna. I've been expecting you.
You've heard about Joe?
Yes. We're all so sad about Joe's death. He was 1 in 10,000 million. The whole town will come to his funeral, those of us who can put one foot in front of the other. I bet the dappled ponies will come too, and even the warrior ghosts who play the game. The boulder birds will gather on the Hermitage rocks to sing a requiem for Joe. And I would be unsurprised if the mountain wildflower flocks find some way to uproot themselves and make an appearance. Meanwhile, Joe's monks from all over the world are flying here for the service.
He has left the world a better place, Alan.
True. Everyone I know who has been in contact with him now tries to treat other men and women as holy persons, being courteous and thoughtful and kind. It's so easy. And what a payback.
Did Joe leave something here for me?
Yes, it is a present for you from Joe. It is not for the Hermitage, although it is his official portrait.
He handed her a small picture framed in gold-painted wood, covered in glass. It showed Joe in a pencil drawing, all head and ears and lopsided eyes, spidery arms, legs, hands, and feet, tilted on the paper as if flying. In Joe's printing was written, "The Holy Man, 1923 to 1996, by Melissa.
You have been listening to The Man on the Mountaintop, adapted from Susan Trott's The Holy Man and The Holy Man's Journey by Libby Spurrier, starring Stanley Tucci as the narrator and Toby Jones as Joe. Featuring Saga Aria, Rachel Atkins, Tim Bentinck, Sheena Bertessa, Laurence Bouvard, Emma Burstyn, Fran Canals, Lachelle Carl, Lobo Chan, Claire Corbett, Alison Dowling, Jeff Harding, Christophe Espel, Stephen Hogan, Avita Jay, Hayward B. Morse, Paul Panting, Christopher Ragland, Richard Rees, Anne Rosenfeld, Liza Ross, Luke Stoneham, and David Thorpe. Theme music was composed by Odin Hilmerson, with incidental cello music played by Sarah Butcher. Vocal edit by Alex Barton, and sound design by John Wakefield. Production coordinators, Marielle Ranaker-Temple, Nicola Wall, Yuki Palmer, and Imogen Papworth. The production was recorded by Andy Goddard at Audible Studios London. Executive producer, Katie Arlett. Commissioning editor, Rebecca Fenton. Produced and directed by Liza Ross, Garrick Hagen, and The Story Circle for Audible Originals 2017. A note from the commissioning editor. This commission is dedicated to the memory of Sharon Fenton, a courageous, kind, and strong holy woman.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.